This is 1360 AM.
WNJC. Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
All right, welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats here, no ranting rhetoric, simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment on training in risk management, preparedness, and proactive survival. Survival is every day, so live well. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show comes to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia. As always, listen to us live on the internet via my website, practicepreparedness.com. We stream every time on TuneIn. Find a link on our website via the Listen Live button, or if you are in the Delaware Valley, you can listen live at 1360 on your AM radio. As always, you can stream the past shows. You will find them archived on the website under show notes or select one from the scrolling list on the website's right column. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Will Hemingway. I want to stimulate your little gray cells. Let's get started. I am happy to have with us today Dick Gadd, the inventor and patent holder of the Pro-Tick Removal Tool. He got his patent on September 5th, 1995, filed in 94. To me, it is one of the greatest simple tools that are out there, highly effective, and Dick has been nice enough to take some time out of his busy day to come spend some time with me and the listeners to be able to enlighten and broaden this conversation about ticks removal and other related subjects. So thank you for joining us, Dick, and let's get started.
So as I was telling the listeners before you came on, I do really believe that one of the things that people need to do is to understand that, much similar to that of getting a burn, if you wait until the moment that you've been burned to go get something to handle it with, the results are going to be terrible. You get your burn treatments ahead of time. You learn what to do and how to handle your burns. If they're bad enough, of course, you're going to end up getting a professional to do it anyway, unless you happen to be one. That said, it's the same thing with ticks. If you don't go into life understanding that this is a problem and that you can minimize the risk from it by being prepared up front, then you help yourself and you minimize the effects all the way around. So I have been a really big fan of your Pro-Tick Remedy Tool. When each time they identify a new form of one of these oocysts, as you so perfectly put it, they have less and less denial as that they did in the very beginning with the original Lyme disease issue. The interesting thing is, I've done my own research. I've had several friends who were close to me who suffered pretty severely as a result of it. And what we found was that there were evidences, and in DNA evidence, going back over 3,000 years, back to Egyptian mummies, of ticks that had what was identifiably Lyme's disease in those ticks back then. So it's not that it's such a new thing, it's just that we suddenly understand how it works and the damage that it causes. One of my friends had contacted me earlier in the week telling me that they've discovered another new version of a tick-borne illness that popped up, I believe it was in Illinois or Wisconsin. It involved another version that caused, that they say they don't have a cure for, that caused meningitis and some neurological damage, which was pretty troubling. But, you know, it's this ongoing thing. I do get a little worried as to how we have the, as I used to tell my grandmother all the time, the illness of the week club. There's some new crisis every week that comes along. So, oh, it was in Montana, that's right. But in any event, so the upside is your tool has been tested pretty thoroughly. I think it was University of Ohio, was it, that had tested it?
Yes, they tested it twice. They tested it on dog ticks. Mm-hmm. We came out at 50-50. We removed all 50 ticks intact with the largest amount of cement. The cement is secreted by the tick to help seal the lesion and to help the tick hold in place.
Right. And, a lot of people don't really understand. I was going through, I was actually looking for a decent video, which I did put a link on my website for today's show, of someone demonstrating the use of it. It actually sounded like your voice, so I was wondering if maybe it was you taking a tick off of their side using a mirror.
It was me.
Mm-hmm, there you go. I thought I recognized the voice. And that must have been fun. You were trying to use the video camera as your sight, huh?
I was trying to use a video camera for my visual, and then to place the room. It was comical.
I bet, because
there were several moments of swear words and got to be kidding moments.
Little editing in that video, huh?
Yeah.
The I watched it and thought, I'm pretty sure that's Dick's voice. When I've done it, I just removed a Lone Star tick off of my left knee on the inner side of my knee. And I was a little troubled because every time I have ever removed a tick using the Pro Tick Remedy tool, I have never had anything but a little pink spot where it was. And I always, you know, deal with it with some alcohol or some hydrogen peroxide. And then that was that. With mine, I had 3 or 4 days of some minor irritation, which spread pretty wide on my leg, and then after some Neosporin, it disappeared pretty rapidly. I think you had mentioned about the anticoagulants that they use to try to keep the blood flowing.
Right. The Lone Star tick in particular, their bite often ulcerates after the tick is removed. It's got to be something that they're part of their anticoagulant process that they're injecting into the wound. But they're, in my opinion, the most aggressive of all ticks. And also, they have a long mouth part or hypostome, mm-hmm. and they're the most difficult to remove.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done tests with Lone Stars when I was down in Maryland, and we actually put some dry ice, which emits CO, which is something that they're attracted to, on the middle of a sheet. And we were finding that the Lone Star traveled quite a distance to seek out a host, where most ticks just kind of hang out on a piece of leaf litter or grass and wait for the host. The Lone Star, they'll actually hunt you down.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting, because that's... And, you know, of course, that is part of the thing. I've always figured with some, shall we say, educated guesstimation, that the reason that when I give a class and I take a hike in the woods, or I'm out hiking with friends in the woods, that I'm normally not the one who gets it, is because I'm the one in the point who's moving rapidly and they're moving at different speeds behind me. By the time they sense the CO, and then they drop on them, not on me. That's generally what I figure, that which is why I tend to have it less, although saying that, I'll probably have 800 on me this weekend just because I said that.
Yeah.
So with the, you're still there, right, Dick?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, it got so quiet all of a sudden, I could hear you in the background before. So one of the things about it that most people don't understand, if you go and watch some of these so-called experts doing videos on YouTube removing ticks, when they go to use a pair of tweezers, normally a set of needle tip tweezers, they are going at them on an angle, generally. And I watched almost 100 of them yesterday and today, and I was stunned by the fact that they were squeezing the entire tip of the tick, and I mean the entire tip of the tick, which was just so troubling because we understand that it's basically like using a bulb and squeezing whatever they do have that they didn't get in you in when they grab it. So I wanted to touch down, and anything that you want to add to it, please just interrupt. But the bottom line is, for everybody out there who thinks they know how to handle a tick, do not put Vaseline on it. Do not use a cigarette. Do not use a lit or a glowing match. Do not heat them. Do not smash them. Do not grab them with your fingers, because all of these things will cause them to basically vomit whatever they didn't put in you already into you instead of get off of you. I've seen people use a lit match or a lighter, or they heat a piece of metal. Have any of you listening out there ever looked at why they say on a paint can, on a spray can, don't put it in above 120 degrees? Because the higher the heat, the more the pressure. If your shaving cream isn't squirting and you hold it in the hot water for a minute and get the can hot and then it squirts, that's because with temperature, so pressure. Well, if you're heating the tick, it's going to have to go somewhere, and that means it's going to back flush into you, whether it's whether it's the bacteria in them or the last blood meal that they had from the last animal they were on, which may not be that nice. So boy, we're just having everything happen in the studio today. Interesting.
I always found it ridiculous where people would, you know, a lot of these folklore remedies were devised prior to us realizing the number of diseases that these ticks carry.
Mm-hmm.
And once you realize what they're carrying, and that little female is attached to you, sucking blood, why in God's name would you try to torture it?
Right.
You know, you want to get it off as quickly as possible.
Yep. Well, so when they tested yours in the one study that I had read, it succeeded 72% of the nymph ticks that it was tested on were taken off. Now, they're the hardest, basically, right? They're the hardest ones to remove.
Yeah, that was the Lone Star test.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested the tick remover against a fine-tip tweezer. And the fine-tip tweezer successfully removed 4%. We were up in the high 70s.
Mm-hmm. You know, not to be too graphic, so I'll try to clean it as best as I can, but the ticks tend to love to go to places that are places we wish nothing would ever go to, no, at least not any animal, and are highly inaccessible, if not certainly uncomfortable to get to. And if you're alone and you're trying to use a pair of tweezers, you're out of luck. I have used the Pro Tick Remedy tool in places that I never want to discuss in public that worked beautifully and had no negative repercussions. When I went to the doctors couldn't believe that I even got it off there, let alone that it had no negative impact. And when they used my pocket microscope, because they didn't have one, to check the wound to make sure there were no parts left in there, they were stunned that there was not even barely an identifiable mark, because it did such a great job. And I think that's really the key to me. I tried all the other versions out there before I went to yours. I'm very specific that I don't ever put my name on anything unless I know that it works for me and that I've given it to others and it's worked for them. And I just had zero success compared to what I had with yours. And it's so simple. And I can always have one or two or three with me in different places when I inevitably cannot find them. because that's the way life goes.
Yeah.
You know?
I always carry two in my wallet. I take the chains off so they fit in with my credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I carry two is occasionally a tick will almost bury itself within the fatty tissue of, let's say, a fold on the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And or in another soft, fleshy area. So what I do is I use one tick remover to kind of grab the posterior and then lift it so I can position the second pro-tick remedy around the mouth parts.
Oh, so you slide, what do? Slide one in and then slide the other in on top of it?
Yeah, I basically lift the tick, just grabbing what I could grab of the tick,
mm-hmm.
gently lift it so I could pucker the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can get that second pro-tick right around the mouth parts where it's actually entering the skin.
I see. This last one that I had, this Lone Star tick that I had, was so in there. I had a really hard time. This was the first time I ever had a difficult time with your tool getting it to try to get it to bury deeply. I was actually afraid I was going to shear the tip off of it because it kept spinning basically on me in the tool, which was the first time I ever had that happen. It was as it turned out, I got it out very successfully. It removed itself and it left no, you know, residual components in my knee. But that was the first time I ever had any kind of a complication with it at all. It couldn't have been set more than 18 to 24 hours at best.
Yeah, but they really can pull in tight on occasion, and that's mm-hmm. why I just gave you that example of, you know, one to kind of lift it up so you can access where you need to be grabbing it.
Hmm. It's a great idea. So if we could, and I'll let you, because you've explained this 1,000 times, can you go down the run of how the process of using the tool? I have the video on my site, so everyone who's listening, they can go watch it. They get a look at it. There's a link to my website. I sell them. It's straight up, but if you can go down through, it's pretty straightforward. By the way, for everyone who hasn't already gotten one of them from me, there's a nice little punch-out card that you can put in your wallet that has a color ID chart to identify the different types of ticks, so it gives you some input as to what you're dealing with. And then we'll talk about afterwards, we'll talk about keeping the tick so that you can have that in case you need to identify anything with it.
And we also will have that tutorial on ticks, you know, how to identify them
mm-hmm.
and how to protect yourself from them. You know, because it would be really great if we didn't need the tool, but the reality is that we need it more often than not. But
so if you could break down for them how you use the tool and how it differentiates. We already identified that it's different than using a pair of needle tip tweezers. If you can explain. So for those of you who have not seen it, go to the website. You'll see the video picture and the picture on the link of it, a very close-up picture of what it looks like. It's stainless, right? It's surgical stainless, I think?
It used to be stainless, but we wanted to make it thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to make it more rigid. When we got into the very thin stainless steel, it would bend.
Okay.
So what we did is we went to a very thin steel, and then we actually heat treat it, temper it, and then plate it.
Hmm.
The reason we wanted to make it thinner is if you looked at the profile of the tool, we wanted to make it thinner than you could possibly make the profile of a fine tip tweezer.
Okay.
It actually grab between the mouth parts and the skin.
Hmm. And that's
now it's,
that was one of my problems with a lot of the other versions. They have these aluminum ones that are anodized. The things are so thick. It was halfway up the head of the tick before you even got near it.
Yeah, and if you were trying to those tools generally go over the tick. And then the directions say to slide it. Now, if you're sliding it, in my estimation, I've, to my knowledge, I've never seen any official tests on those tools. But if you slide it horizontal to the tick is attached to the skin, you're basically providing a shearing motion.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm sure it comes out on occasion, I also believe that it would more than not leave the mouth parts in place.
Right. And in your tool, it's a really, it's an angled, it's a tapered entrance so that by the time you work it carefully in to the center, it's so narrow and so tight on that, it grabs the proboscis and helps pull it out rather than
yes.
leave it in.
Correct.
So
and it, we also, you know, it looks small, but part of the reason it was made as small as it is we didn't want to have a tool that provided so much leverage that you could over-torque the tick before it was removed.
Right. So if you could, so go through the process of you get the tool onto the tick, you slide it in underneath of the tick from behind, right?
And well, from behind or what I generally recommend that people do, if you suspect it's a tick, before you do anything, you need to identify that it's not a skin tag or a wart. And if you, the tick is going to be holding, their hyperstrome is inserted into the skin, and the posterior of the tick is flat to the skin at that point. And they really are able to hold very flat to the point where you first notice them. You say, oh, I have a wart or I have a skin tag. But if you take the tool, you can lift the back of the tick, and once you lift it, it's basically hinged to the skin.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the legs move, and then you say, well, it's not a wart.
Right.
So at that point, I generally approach it so the I go in from the rear of the tick, and it doesn't always have to be that way, but this is just my preference. And I carefully negotiate the tool between the tick and the skin through the widest part of the slot, and then moving the tool forward until I have the tick at the apex of the V in the back of the tool.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that little extra time, a lot of people get halfway in and then they start pulling. You're much better off taking the extra time to get that tick as far in that apex as possible, and then apply, you know, do your upward lifting pressure, and I generally recommend holding the puckered skin, as I describe it. Could be for several seconds, could be as long as a minute. But instead of forcing the tick, give it an opportunity to release.
Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, it has basically the center that goes in that acts like the straw, and then there are two little pieces that go in and bend that lock on, and then it glues itself to you, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct, yeah.
So it will actually excrete the removal goo that lets go of that nearly latex glue that it puts on to lock itself on and release itself. I've done it. I've seen it happen. I've taken it off of dogs and cats. I've taken them off of other people. And when it's not on me, it's a lot easier because I get a better view of it. And it's quite blatantly obvious what happens when you lift up and the tick gets the idea that it's no longer a friendly host. Plus, I think correct me if I'm wrong, when you slide it all the way into the apex of the slit in the tool, it basically pinches it off to minimize any backflush that you're going to get.
Yeah, I don't know if it's grabbing that hard, but it's quite possible that it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you remove that, like in the dog tick in particular, oftentimes you'll go and you'll remove it and you'll hear a popping sound.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the back of the blade where the mouth parts are protruding from, you'll see what appears to be this white glob. And that's that latex cement.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think it's their skin that they're pulling off, but it's not. It's just the tick cement.
Right. And so, and the whole thing about it is that you want it off as quickly as you can because it may not have set all the way. It may not have begun getting its blood meal yet, which is the better point, because the quicker you remove it, the less likely you hood that you have of having an infection from it. So that's why having the tool ahead of time is so important, and knowing what to do with it.
When the tick, typically, let's say the Ixodes ticks, which are the deer ticks, when an infected tick, before it has its blood meal, they find that the spirochetes from Lyme disease, are residing in what they call the midgut of the tick. When that tick begins its blood meal, those spirochetes start to replicate extremely rapidly, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, etc. And at a point when it's been on for that 24 hours, that midgut is ripe with those spirochetes.
Hmm.
The opportunity now is that it's, as it injects the anticoagulant into the lesion, it can. That's at the point where they believe that the spirochetes that have now multiplied can be put into the host.
Okay.
That's why you want to interrupt that feeding process. You know, even if you accidentally leave the mouth part in, almost every tick expert out there says you have at least stopped the process of a potential spirochete entering the skin. You stopped the process. And then they just say put an antibiotic on the, you know, like a skin cream on the mouth part that's left in and put a bandage on it.
Mm-hmm.
And just treat it like a splinter. Don't try to remove it.
Oh, really? Now, yeah. One of the things that I was amazed by, I had one in the private area a while back, and I successfully removed it quite rapidly under a great deal of, shall we say, alarm because of where it was. And I ended up going to a doctor's office, which it just so happened, because that's the way things go, was completely staffed by all females, who then needed to look at the area in order to inspect to make sure that I had properly removed the tick. And when the doctor got in there to do this so-called inspection, and I asked her what they normally do with them, I had 5-10 years probably, and you and I had actually spoken in depth about it even prior to that. I knew a decent amount about how to remove ticks, about dealing with them, what to do, and had done my own research. I had been to CDC classes on it. And the look that I got was so troubling was, well, we just grab them by the end with the tweezers. Okay. So you don't know anything about ticks then, right?
Well, you know, most medical doctors aren't trained in entomology.
Right. And so... And the way the questions and answers went were, so you really don't know anything about ticks. Have you ever seen one? No. Have you ever removed? No. Have you ever been around one that was removed? No. Okay. So basically, I just wasted $120 to walk in here to have you look at it because you don't know.
Right.
And they said, well, I can write you a prescription for Cipro, so you can't do that. So that's what you just paid $120 for. This is the reality. So people need to know so that they are informed themselves in order to be able to care for themselves, because they're not going to do it. And if they do, they're not going to do it well. I ended up selling them for Pro Remedy Tick Tools while I was there. It was funny. I ended up bringing them back to them later and demonstrating to them how it worked. And then I taught them how to save the tick so that if they needed to run a test, if the person seemed to have gotten sick, they could possibly obtain some proof of whatever the illness was that came from the tick, from doing a test on the tick. And that's the next thing. So most people in the CDC and all say that if you remove the tick, you should immediately place it in a plastic bag sealed with a small piece of paper towel damp. Do you have anything else to add to that?
No, that's exactly the way I do it.
Okay.
Some of the testing agencies say it doesn't even need to be moist.
Mm-hmm.
Because they grind the tick up when they do the testing.
Oh, okay.
Dry tick, but...
And see, I kind of figured that myself, but CDC taught us to keep a damp cloth in with it, so that's...
I'd rather keep the... Well, there's an important reason besides, you know, at the center where they're going to test the tick, yeah, they're going to grind it up. But before that ever happens, being able to identify the species of the tick,
mm-hmm,
and the location where you pick the tick up is a big tool in identifying any diseases that tick may be carrying.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to me, the Lone Star tick...
Identify.
Right. And the Lone Star tick is one of the easiest to ID if it's a female, at least. Because
you got the big white spot on her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. And then it gets harder and harder. About 3 years ago, I was down in a local state forest park near me where I like to take people for classes, and I was so troubled because the ignorance that's out there regarding this issue is stunning. There was a woman who was one of the park rangers at this state forest, and I've talked with her a lot of times. She's very bright. She was completely oblivious about ticks, and she was sitting at her desk when I walked into her office scratching her leg. Here she had been out in the leaf matter out back where they had a little area to show off to kids different types of flora and fauna and whatnot, and she was completely cut. Her whole leg and her crotch was covered in her shorts.
All right.
With little teeny weeny little specks that look like spots, you know, like smaller than a grain of salt. And they were running all around on her legs, and they were all ticks, all of them.
Sure.
And she just laughed and was like, you know, it's no big deal. Oh, okay. And this is where it gets really tricky, because when they're that small, it's really, it's almost impossible to spot them, which is why we're going to segue into the other side of it, which is what the advice is that's reliable in order to stop that problem in its tracks, which is to use repellents. And the repellents, of course, I believe you and I basically agree on the one, which is the Sawyer permethrin. And a lot of people who I know have had pretty good luck. I've had kind of 50-50 reliability with a Skin So Soft by Avon that worked reasonably well for a while and then seemed to not work as well. But the permethrin, which for those of you who don't know who are listening, is strictly made for applying to clothing and gear, not on your skin.
Correct.
So
now it's not a case of permethrin as an insecticide is used on skin, but not in this application.
Mm-hmm.
It's used for head lice. It's used for scabies, which are also a mite kind of generated illness. But the primary reason you don't apply this to skin is because of the solvents.
Mm-hmm.
Solvents are designed to accommodate the chemical onto your clothing. And on your clothing, it's going to last 6 weeks or six washings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not applied like some people. I was joking with a lumberman today. I said, some people spray the DEET into the air and then walk through the mist.
Ugh.
Well, that's not the way you apply permethrin. Permethrin, right now, I generally recommend that people take a full 6-ounce aerosol can and apply the entire can to an outfit. So it's a treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Not per se like a repellent. And when I had this lumberman out today, we were walking in the back of my property. I had treated my pants before we went out. And as we went into the back, right now we have the American dog tick. They're fairly large. And I spotted one on the cuff of my pants. I said, you know, to the gentleman, I said, let's watch this tick. So we didn't stand there and watch it, but we saw she was progressing up. She got to about my knee and stopped. She just wasn't able to proceed any longer because the chemical had affected her.
Mm-hmm.
It was affecting her system, and it wasn't that much longer before she simply fell off.
Right.
And that tick in 24 hours will be dead. The difference is, and I tell people, like, if you're at a picnic and one person knows how to apply DEET, your more traditional repellent, and another person doesn't, and a tick goes to attack that person that has properly applied the DEET and decides, well, I'm not interested in that host, that tick is still available to attack the person who didn't apply the DEET or didn't know how to apply the DEET.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer that they die versus be available to attack someone else.
I'm with you. And I think, if I may quote, you have a little piece on your website, which I actually copied and put onto the page for today because I thought it was so important, going to the point you made earlier, which is, and I quote, "Not all permethrin is blended for the purpose of bonding to fabric. Most permethrin is agricultural, which is for pest control on vegetation. Its design purpose is to stick to plants, thus protecting the plants. Veterinary products are designed to adhere to animal skins, hair, or premises, and are not for fabric application. Some permethrin is formulated for treatment of medical conditions such as head lice and scabies. The formulations are not interchangeable, mostly because of the solvents used. Always refer to manufacturer's label and follow instruction. This is really critical, because anytime you're using any type of an insecticide or a chemical of any type, it's critical that you use it the way it was designed to be used. They're designed to be safe when they're properly applied, and that's the key. I mean, look, you can go to your doctor if you have head lice or your children have head lice and can be 8 months pregnant, and they will still provide you a lotion that has up to 35% level of permethrin in the lotion, in the salve that you can apply, and it's perfectly safe for a pregnant woman. But you're not using the one they spray on fabric, you're not using the one they spray onto these other things, because they have other chemicals that will negatively affect the way it interacts with the human body.
And when most people get a can of permethrin, they're reading the label, there's a hierarchy of warnings associated with an insecticide. The bare minimum warning is caution. That's what the way the 0.5% permethrin is registered. 0.5% is a caution. You can't get any less of a warning than that. It's not a skull and crossbones. It's been out for, oh God, we've been dealing with each other for what, 15 years? So it's got to be out for 25. And no bad results. And an additional side effect is ticks don't know that they're walking on, it's not a repellent for a tick. They don't even seem to realize that the fabric has been treated. But another adversary that we deal with is mosquitoes. A mosquito typically will not go near a piece of fabric that has been treated with permethrin. In their case, they're sensing something, and they stay way, way clear of it.
Yep, and that's the added bonus that comes out of it. The other thing is, too, its close cousin to the tick, the chiggers, are also repelled pretty well from them, too.
Absolutely.
I've had very good luck. I taught a couple of people I know who are surf fishermen, and they go down along the shoreline. And I certainly learned the hard way one year when I thought I was going to go crabbing and stepped down onto the beach and was just absolutely covered by it and by chiggers. And I learned everything there was to know about chiggers that day, because I went online and read everything there was to know after some person who I trusted in the beginning had informed me how, oh, chiggers, they hang on you like a tick, and they would put pure bleach on them, their legs, because they were farmers, to get rid of them, when in fact the chiggers would bite, make a hole, secrete some fluid that was necrotizing, that would make the skin melt in the liquid,
right,
suck the liquid up to eat your skin in a liquaceous form, and have a meal of your skin, and then leave and go do it again somewhere else. And here I am thinking, because they told me like an idiot, I went and, oh, okay, I'm putting bleach in basically open wounds, which didn't work out really well. And this
with chiggers, you basically, by the time you are getting these insane itches associated with it, that's the after effect. Chigger is gone at that point. They've dissolved the lymph, and they have had their meal, and they've left.
Yep.
Whatever they dissolve that skin with, is it'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, it's when I spoke to a guy who I know in Atlanta at CDC, who works with the National Forest Division there, he told me that it was basically akin to the venom that is in a pit viper, that basically immediately begins digesting the skin against contact. And that's why, because if you don't arrest it by washing it off, it'll just keep eating around the hole that they've made long time after they've been long gone off of you. So, and that's the whole thing. It's about understanding what you're up against, understanding what to do to repel them. Now, of course, there are a lot of us, and me included, who are very remiss and concerned about using the DEET products because of the issues with skin absorption and the problems with that. That's why I am really hot on the idea of using permethrin treatments. If you're going to take a bedroll or sleeping bag or a tent out, make sure that you've checked and tested that it's not going to damage that material. Do it on some part that's not important, inside or something. Once you know it's okay, go to town. Like he said, I just treated 2 pair of pants. I do everything. Underwear, pants, socks, shirt, the whole deal. Hat, the whole deal from tip to tail. My boots, everything. Because when I get done, I'm done. 1 12-ounce bottle. I only use the hand spray pump one. I happen to like them better. And that's that. And I know they've been well treated, and well into the 6 weeks period, I still have no problem. And this is where a couple of lessons that I've learned, and I'd be interested if you have any additional ideas on it. But one is that when you remove a tick, you should place it in the bag. Take a Sharpie. I always recommend having a Sharpie with you all the time in every kit, in your car, whatever. Have some baggies. Nowadays, there are these awesome, completely worthless baggies unless you have a one-year-old and want to take Cheerios around. These little baggies they call snack bags. They're like a half of a baggie or a third of a baggie, but they're awesome for putting the ticks in. And have a, and you can even put the Sharpie right there with it. So when you pull the tick, this is a lesson I have learned. Write the date, the time you remove it, when you believe roughly was the place, area, and what, when you got that tick or when you were in the area that you were exposed, so that it's all right there. Because a week from then, when you thought nothing was going to happen, and it does, you suddenly have that information. The other thing I do is I draw a 3-inch ring around it, around with the center being where the tick was removed from, with the Sharpie, so that if anything does come up there, I see the ring, even if it started to diminish after shower, I know right where the bite was. These are useful tips.
Very good idea.
So have you ever done, are there any other things that you've done with these at all? Like, see, one of the things I've tried to decide on, which I really haven't come up with a good way, the last time I did it, I wrote a number inside my pants and inside my shirt. I wrote a number on the toe of my sock, and I put in my phone the number and the date that I sprayed permethrin on it, so that I'd remember, so that when I look at those, I'd say to myself, which are the ones that have been recently sprayed, because not all my outfits are going to be, I want to use them when I'm going out somewhere.
Right.
Have you ever come up with any better idea? I know people who safety pin a tag in. That's really annoying. Any other ideas for that?
I write on the pocket, on the inside of the pocket.
Ah.
You know, there you like go. Before the pants are on, I just take it and I write the date on it. And when I treat them again, I write the new date.
There you go.
It doesn't show, and it, you know, by the time the jeans are a year and a half old, they're probably threadbare anyway at that point.
There you go. And that's, the whole thing is, it's about, this is why I teach preparedness, because it's not about waiting until you're in crisis to try to figure these things out. You've dealt with it a lot. It's your business. I've dealt with it a lot because I teach it. People who've never dealt with these things, when you run into this problem, it's too late to figure it out then. It's time to know now. So put these things together. You can go to my website. You can order the ProTick tools. If you go to my classes, you can just wait and come, because I'm ordering a whole bunch more this week so that I'll have them for next month's classes if you're coming to the local classes, so you don't have to pay for shipping. But they are, in my estimation, the absolute best choice to handle this problem. And, you know, last year, there's a couple other things I want to add real quickly, and if you have any input. My son in Florida, 2 years ago, had a problem. His dog was so covered in ticks that it was almost torture. It was sad. And my son was pretty upset because he loves his dog. And it was just covered in ticks. He could not stop it. He's in Southwest Florida. And I told him to go to the vet and get whichever version that was approved to use of the permethrin on the dog, and he did. They had tried the hearts and the frontline tick and flea collars. It really did nothing. And then it dawned on me that he had been taking his dog in the car with him. And I told him, I said, you know, William, I read about this test that was done by the National Forest Service and the guys going with their trucks in the woods, and that they estimated that they were getting most of their ticks on themselves, not from being in the woods, but from the fact that the ticks had made a home in their truck. So I had him spray his seats and underneath of his seats on the floor with the permethrin. And a day later, his light blue seats and his light blue floor mats were nearly black, he said, with thousands of dead ticks all over them.
Wow. It has a great residual kill. Mm-hmm. You know, and your listeners, when you go to the vet or you go to the pet store, you can find 0.5% permethrin labeled for application to dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to read the label. 0.5%, that's all you need, and just do not apply it to cats.
Right, cats, that's right. I remember us talking about that before. I'm allergic to cats, so cats are out of my realm. It has a very negative effect on the cats, as I've been told by a couple people that I know. So it is
all cats, but some cats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an important part coming up around mid-month now through August is nymphal deer ticks are emerging. Those are the tiny ones, and they are typically the ones that transmit most of the Lyme disease because they feed more successfully than the adults do.
Oh,
find
okay.
Adult before you find a nymphal tick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super important when your listeners are out there. I know you feel dorky doing it, but blouse those pants and tuck them into your socks. Force that tick to the outside of your garment, even if it's not treated. If your shirt is tucked in and your pants are tucked in, you're going to force that tick to crawl upwards to find a feeding location where you can find the tick. If it gets into you, you probably have heard people say, well, I never had a rash. Well, most people never take a handheld mirror and a flashlight and look at their private parts to see if there's a rash. I know I don't. And those nymphal ticks will get in. They get into the crotch area. Into the buttocks area, you will never know that they're feeding. You won't have any sense of irritation or anything while they're there.
That's because they're so small, is that why?
They're very, very small. They're very stealth. You put a nymphal tick on your arm, and even when they cross hair, you will not feel that tick.
Wow.
Activate that hair follicle. You know,
wow.
Mornings. Yeah.
And so that goes back to why I even do my underwear. And if you don't want to go all in, then at least do around the leg entrances to them where they're going to come crawling in, because as he said already, they'll walk past it and then within a short distance drop over, because that's the key. You don't want them making a home and making a meal out of you, and that's really important. It's just so,
correct.
so important, and that's why, as I always say, there's no disaster when you're prepared. If you prepare ahead of time, a little bit of permethrin and that, if you get to the point, you have a pro-tick remedy tool, you can remove it. But if you don't know any of that and you have thought, it's not that big of a deal, remember, if you're taking your dog out to the dog park and walking on the grass or sitting, I worked on my truck in the middle of a parking lot over 150 feet away from trees in one direction and a football field in another, and I had two on me when I got up a half an hour later last year. I was stunned because I was so far away from high grass, leaf matter, nothing that should have allowed, and it just so happened that I ended up taking my clothes off to change, and I saw it on my leg. Mm-hmm. So
they're an amazing animal. They really are.
Yep.
They're well equipped for their purpose in life, and their only purpose is to get a blood meal to either molt into a nymphal stage or molt into an adult stage, mate and have eggs and do it all over again. They don't do anything else.
Yep. Eat and procreate. That's basically the deal. Well, Dick, I really want to thank you so much for coming and spending time with us. And we'll have you back again, and I'll be talking to you later on in the week also. So thank you so much for coming on with us.
Well, appreciate having the opportunity. Have a good
day. Take care now. All right. So in the last couple minutes, I just want to double back on the idea that you have to remember that it's a dual-pronged attack. If you have to take it off, as Dick said, it doesn't matter how long it's been there. We want to get everything, but if you're doing it right, you probably will. One way or another, getting the tick off as soon as you find it is the key. The longer you wait, the more opportunity you have it for it to be squeezed, for it to act like a bulb and spit back into you. One of 100 other things, as he said, within 24 hours of them taking their first blood meal from you, they're going to have the spirochetes and the other bacteria going crazy in their gut, and they're going to walk their way right back up their proboscis right back into you. You want to avoid that at all costs. But the key is that proactive is much better and much more reliable than reactive. So use permethrin. It's not that expensive. It's 42 days at last and 6 washings of your clothing. If you use a blanket on your goat, or you have things that you throw down for them that have, get the one that's made for that. A lot of times if they're cloth, you can use the same one you use for your own gear and clothing. Do your backpack, do your hat, do your scarf, do your socks, do your boots. Make sure that you have done everything, because just saying that you have tucked in your pants into your socks and you've tucked your shirt in and tied and pulled your belt tight does not mean they will not get you. They will come in from the top. They will come in through your armholes. They will get to you unless you have done something to stop them. So please, I cannot stress enough, if you don't get the Sawyer permethrin from me, go to Dick's Sporting Goods, go to Walmart. There are a plethora of places that have them. The prices vary broadly, but I highly recommend the Sawyer brand of the permethrin. I've had very good luck with it, and there are very good reviews for 20, 30 years of it not having any negative side effects on people or when properly applied. Make sure that you coat your things well when you do it. And like always, as I say, being prepared is the key. There's no disaster when you're prepared. So as usual, I remind you to go check the webpage at practicepreparedness.com. Visit us, touch me on Twitter. And until next week, I'm Will Hemingway. Be safe, be prepared. We're out of here.
And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively, act with purpose every day, have a plan, and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.